Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode number 2 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, designed to help smart businesses who are interested in all things innovation and the Internet of Things become even more innovative. Today's guest, all the way from Manila in the Philippines, is Johnson Onking of Pacific Paints Boysen. Now, Johnson is going to share with us his experience in innovation and innovative product development today, and there are a number of gems in this interview. We're going to learn a lot today from Johnson, I certainly did, and he talks about how having the right team in place is really important for innovation, having the right corporate culture, having a culture of innovation, but at the same time having systems there that both foster innovation and also do not act as barriers of innovation. He talks about one product in particular that's already commercial, which is a very innovative development, and it's quite exciting to hear about this one and hear the passion in his voice as to not only what that discovery or that development did for Pacific Paints, but also the contribution that's making to society as a whole. Johnson also talks about knowing your customer. He makes a comment that we don't provide paint. What we provide is an experience. And there's another gem that comes out of the interview, and you'll hear how he describes that in more detail. It's important, I think, to keep that in mind in all industry, that it's not your product or your service that you're necessarily providing customers, you're providing them an experience or a solution to a problem or a need. So today's innovation tip is know your customer. Understand what is the need or the problem that you're solving. What is the need you're addressing? How can you be better at that? Step away from the product or the service and dig deeper and find out what your customer really wants, what your customer really needs, and also what other opportunities there might be that you can help your customer. So there you go, that one directly from the interview today. And before we get to meet Johnson though, let me just introduce today's competition. I'm giving away a copy of my workshop, 7 Website Design Secrets to Get You More Sales. That's a video series together with a workbook and a resources guide. And stay tuned later on in the interview where you can find out how to enter the draw to win that competition. So without further ado, let's meet Johnson. Let's go to the Innovation Hive and hear the buzz from Johnson Onking.
This is the InnovaBuzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and today I'm very pleased to have with me, all the way from Manila in the Philippines, Johnson Onking, who's the Vice President of Pacific Paints Boysen. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Johnson.
Well, thank you, Jürgen. It's an honor to be here on your show. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, we're going to talk today about all things innovation in the paint industry and manufacturing and product development. A lot of consumers don't really associate house paint or industrial paints with innovation, but let me tell you from my own experience that paint manufacture and paint product development is indeed a very innovative industry, and Pacific Paints Boysen are among the leaders in innovation in that field. But before we talk about paints and innovation in the paint industry, quick competition announcement. So today I'm giving away a copy of my 7 Website Design Secrets to Get You More Sales workshop video together with full workbook and resources guide. So stick around for details on how you can enter the draw to win that later on in this interview. Okay, Johnson. So before we get on to talking about Pacific Paints Boysen and paint manufacturing and product development, let's learn a little bit more about you. So when you were a child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, Jürgen, just like a lot of little boys, I was very much into airplanes, and I thought, wow, wouldn't it be nice to have your own little airline? But now that I'm older and know how difficult that industry is, I'm certainly glad that was just a
Okay.
passing boyhood fancy.
Yeah, well, there hasn't been much joy in that recently, has there?
Yeah,
Yeah.
so better not to be involved in that.
So when did you change your mind and decide you wanted to go into paint manufacturing?
Well, it's funny. My dad was one of the founders of our company, and I remember when I was a small boy, we used to go to the factory on weekends and things like that. But I never really thought about joining the business. In fact, because we used to live in a small two-bedroom apartment, my dad I could hear my dad wake up every morning at 4 o'clock starting his work day. So I thought, there's no way I want to do
So
that.
much like hard work.
Much too hard for me. So I actually did economics in school, and I went to investment banking for a while. And my later on, for family reasons, I came home, but still not really convinced that I would join the company. But when I did finally join, I found out how surprisingly enjoyable it was. And ever since, I really enjoyed working for the company. And as you said, you don't, from an outsider, the paint industry just doesn't look too exciting. I mean, they say they use the washing paint dry as an
Yeah,
idiom for
that's right.
not too exciting things. And but once you go into it, you yourself have been in the industry, so it's a lot more exciting and a lot more fun than people would imagine from the outside.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So how did you get involved then in the company? What was your journey to where you are today?
So I started in the company in 1996, so 18 years ago, and we go through the ranks. So we started, I started in the warehouse, later worked my way into to the laboratory to do some basic technical training, learned the ropes there, did some customer service, sort of went around the organization, learned different things about the business, settled into to a procurement role, which is how we met each other, and still continue that today, and oversee as well the manufacturing and technical parts of the business. So I pretty much look for new technologies and try to bring them into our company and see what we can do with them. I
Okay.
guess it's my most important role
Yeah.
in the company.
Okay. And we'll talk a little bit about some of those later on because there is some exciting stuff there. So you kind of touched on this a little bit, but what do you spend most of your time doing day to day?
Well, a lot of it is making sure, from our procurement part, just making sure we get all the materials we need to make the products we need to do. Of course, when we're doing that, keep a close eye on what new things are out there. And there's always a lot of new stuff, new possibilities out there. So we make sure to explore those, see what has potential, what might be too difficult to do. In my manufacturing sort of oversight role, just make sure we're doing things the right way, getting product out as efficiently as possible, and sort of on the technical side, which is, I think, it's a good practice of both the technical and procurement linkage there, because we can work those two parts very closely, and what sometimes would on paper look like, say a slightly more expensive raw material, but if that's purely a purchasing decision, they don't see the technical merits of it. And if you go the other way, they might not see the financial side of it. So I think that's a good role to have those two. So I bring those two teams together in our company, make sure they talk to each other, and make sure they understand the full picture. And I think the most important part of my job is people development, making sure we keep growing our people and giving them more and more responsibility so that they can develop into future leaders for our company in the future.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. So what in one sentence, what would you describe as, the key thing that Pacific Paints Boysen brings to the marketplace? What's your elevator pitch if somebody asks you, what do you do?
Well, for our company, it's really bringing the highest value paint at a price point that's affordable for people. So we're all focused on bringing the most value. So that really really demands us a lot of work to look at making things as efficient as possible, so that we can lower costs and make our customers enjoy those cost savings.
Okay. Now, you mentioned something about people development and also the interactions between technical and procurement. What do you see as the biggest challenges within the company?
I think it's funny. Like a lot of paint companies, we grew up on a technical mindset. So it's a lot of paint companies are founded by chemists, and they really focus, and understandably so, on a push model, making products and pushing it out to the customers. And it's the same here as in Australia. I think you find out the decision maker for painting decisions is actually the housewife, the woman of the house. And they're making decisions maybe not so much on the technical merits of the product, more on how a certain color makes them feel, how it changes the mood in their rooms and in their homes, these kind of things. So I think our company probably, we need a bit more of, I'm trying to think whether that's left brain or right brain. More of that side. I mean, I think we're very used to making good paint, but trying to understand why people actually buy this or that product, and maybe this or that color more than the product, and understanding that a lot better, I think, as a skill set. We need to get more in tune, say, with the artistic, creative side. Ourselves, of our human dimension, as opposed to just the technical.
Yeah, there's a real gold in that message, because it's basically about understanding who your target market is, who the key decision makers is, and what they're looking for, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So, which is a message that all marketers should be heeding, but often don't.
Well, we need to do it better ourselves. We've got a long way to go on that journey as well.
So, what sort of things keep you awake at night? What are you worried
about? I think I'm paranoid, but the one thing I keep worrying about is there something that's replacing paint? Is what will make paint irrelevant in the long run? Because you go to most design trends start out in hotels and restaurants, and then they eventually go to the work in the homes and office spaces. And you go to conference rooms today, you see a lot of the walls are covered in stuff other than paint.
Yeah.
And so we gotta constantly be, it's fabrics, it's textured materials, even wallpaper is making a bit of a comeback. So these are the kind of things we need to be, keep an eye on. We spend a lot of energy and resources on making sure we're the best in our industry, but if our industry becomes irrelevant, then it's useless.
That's right, yeah. So, yeah, I'm about to do a little introduction around photography and the transition from film, because that's where I started my career in film photography, and it's exactly that happened. Basically, the industry didn't realize that it was about to become redundant, and when they realized it was too late. Yeah.
It won't happen for more or 20, 30 years from now, and hopefully I'll be retired by then. No, don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, it's all about adapting and to the change, isn't it?
Right.
All right. So tell us a little bit about the history of Pacific Paints and how it developed into the company it is today.
Well, the company was founded in 1953, so 61 years ago. There were three people who founded the company. I mentioned my father was one of them. My uncle was one of them, and they had a third business partner. So it came from very, very humble beginnings. They started their roots from a hardware business, and they thought, well, if we're selling a lot of paint, why don't we just make our own paint as well?
Yeah.
And kind of started from that. And so it was a really small backyard factory. In fact, we keep our main office today is where the company started way back then, okay, to remind ourselves of our roots.
Yeah.
And I think they did the really phenomenal part of building the company from nothing to, by the late 70s, we were the market leader in the Philippines. And they've continued to grow that further. And I think by the turn of the century, we've been identified as one of the top 50 paint companies in the world. So I think that's a remarkable achievement to go from zero to something like that. And we're just very, very fortunate to be part of a company that has such heritage. We're purely in the architectural, so decorative paint. We just make house paint. We don't make specialized paint for cars or for cell phones or things like that. And been again just very fortunate that to be part of this company.
Yeah. Well, it has been an amazing journey, and I've been privileged to watch it as a kind of, you know, you've been a customer of mine in the past, so it's been really impressive. And there's another little message in there that, you know, focusing on a niche and being the best at that, and
right,
you can get very successful there. That's great too. Yeah. So tell us about some of those innovative products that, you know, you've got and that you've done recently.
Yeah, I think the one that's got the people most excited is a product called Knoxout. It's a product we've worked with, we developed together with Crystals, of Crystals titanium dioxide manufacturer, who have operations down there in Australia, actually. But there's a business division there that makes, smaller than normal. They call it ultrafine titanium dioxide.
Yeah.
And what they achieve by doing this is amplify the properties in the product. And, we've always thought of paint as for two functions: protection for your surface, make sure your walls don't get damaged, your roof, your doors don't get scratched, these kind of things. And the other is an aesthetic function where you add color and you make things prettier. But the nice thing about adding this ingredient, which they call Crystal Active, into the Knoxout product is it allows the paint to become an air purifier. And what it does, it goes through a process of what's called photocatalysis. You know, so it uses the power of sunlight to activate the titanium dioxide to convert organic pollutants into non-toxic materials. So in essence, what this allows is you can suddenly transform your wall into an air purifier. And so when they first broached this idea with us, when we first talked about it, I think must have been 7-8 years ago, we thought that, just like anyone, this is too good to be true. This is a sci-fi kind of thing. And but we did that, we did all the tests, and I think the technology has actually been used for 30 years or so in power plants and these catalytic converters for vehicles, diesel vehicles, especially for big trucks and things like that. So in those cases, they're chemically activated. So they'll add urea or other ammonia, other substances to get the product to work. So this was an extension of, we've got technology that can reduce pollution coming out of power plants and cars that are known to pollute. And can we get something out there that can, but that's not 100%, that doesn't solve pollution. So can we do something else that can lower the, destroy the pollutants that still come out of it, that still get out in the air? And so that's the genesis of this product. So we did a year's worth of testing here with the Scientific Institute here for air pollution. And I mean, the technology had been tested in Europe before that as well, in bits and pieces, but in many, many different trials all over. So it's the lab data is very convincing. Getting it work in a real life atmosphere is a bit more challenging because you have so many variables that are outside your control, wind and the force of nature. You know, you can be cleaning a lot of air, but it could be just blown away, so it's difficult to measure these kind of things. So, but we think there's, you know, we think it really is something we need in a heavily polluted city like Manila. So there was a bit more of a maybe a social dimension to it than a business aspect. It was more, I think, the thinking when we did, we need to get this out because we need to we need to help clean the air here. We can help people to all play a role in this. And you know, the business part of whether or not this would become a big product for us was more secondary.
Okay, yeah. But it's interesting, I saw, so you've got quite a few videos on your website that show some trials that were done there in the in one of the main thoroughfares in Manila, right. and where you've got artists painting murals, so kind of,
right,
you said
right.
earlier, well, about the aesthetics. So.
Well, you raise a good point. I mean, the first trial we did, the main trial that was 1 year old, 1 year trial that I mentioned, that was just on pure, that we painted a metro rail station, you know, in the middle of this. It is the busiest road in the Philippines, and it's in Manila, sorry. By extension, the Philippines as well, I guess. It's called EDSA, and EDSA are the acronym. So when we first did the trial, we did the trial just on plane, and then got the scientists to do all the measurements. But once we finished that, and we thought, you know, let's do this. The idea of doing this was helping being participative. You know, a company or an individual could do something to help address the problem. Not being, you know, the message was we're all part of the problem in a way because we all ride vehicles that emit pollutants and things. And, you know, very much to the concept of how we try to lower our carbon footprint by being more energy efficient and everything. We thought, how about making people aware that, you know, the main pollutant we address here is NOx, nitrogen oxides, which usually come out from vehicles. So we thought, why don't we do a program where we can encourage people to clean their own NOx footprint? Yeah. You know, because if you can pretty much figure out in a day, if you drive X number of kilometers, you can, and what kind of car you're driving, make a rough calculation of how much NOx you're putting in the atmosphere every day. And we can, again, make a rough calculation of if you paint X square meters of this, you can maybe negate some, if not all, of what you're emitting. Hmm. So we thought, well, we should do that ourselves first, right? And then with the marketing people, the idea, well, if we paint a bunch of white walls, no one's even going to know that's NOx out versus just any ordinary paint. You know, although the paint does have a really nice, the nice side benefit aside from the air cleaning effect is it keeps the paint itself clean because it destroys dirt and oils that stick to normal paint films. But that's not really, you know, people are still not going to figure out that it's what this is. So the idea came about, why don't we, you know, bring in the aesthetic part of paint and make these nice artworks out of it. And you know, they pushed the idea a bit further because I thought that was a really nice message of blending art and science together.
Yeah.
And they said, well, let's make this the world's biggest air purifier.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And then let's make this very heavily polluted, heavy traffic road from, you know, from an eyesore into something that people would actually enjoy driving through every day.
Yeah.
And there is no question from a media point of view, it's generated a lot of interest. I mean, I think it generated a lot more interest than if we had done the same thing and just painted white walls.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So we've had coverage from internet, aside from the local news, a lot of international news organizations that I think that made the artwork made the story a lot more interesting for them.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
It's won a lot of awards as well from the inside, and I think we had again features in environmental shows and things like that that would not have been probably again would not have. The cameras would not have been would not have too much to film. It was just all a bunch of white walls.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
By having the artists in there, it really brightened up. So it's brought people can appreciate the artworks on different dimensions. You know, they can just be if they're stuck in traffic. They look at it, just maybe it adds some color to their day. If they take time to really, if they're stuck there for a longer time, they can really. Look at it, and then they're usually the artists have put some, you know, like all artists, they put some significance, some meaning to their artwork that you don't really see right away. And then, you know, on another level, it's helping clean the air for everyone who's going on this road or waiting for a bus or things like that.
Yeah, it really is a great story. And if people aren't very familiar with this, go to the Boisen website and have a look at some of the videos on there, because it's there's quite a bit of information on there. So it really is a great story, and it again the combination of art and science to help people and help the community. It's great.
Right, and that's going back again. That's why we need more of the artistic side in our company. This was proof that. When you get that side involved, it really helps.
Yeah. So you mentioned that, you know, this generated a lot of publicity, and there were, you know, news media and television cameras and so on. And I noticed you've used a lot of that on your website. When did you discover the web and start making use of that?
Well, I wouldn't say we're ahead of anybody as far as using the web. I think I should probably learn a few tips from you. I should probably get a copy of your book as well, Jürgen. I think for we first approached the web really, I think, as like a lot of people, just to put information up there, but not really taking advantage of the way that you can have a one-to-one sort of engagement. We sort of use it. When we first put out our website and everything, we were thinking, again, we were just so used to the mold of TV advertising, radio advertising, newsprint advertising. Mm-hmm. We thought of it more as just a one-way messaging, and we kind of missed out on the fact that what the web really enables you is to have two-way communication and the possibilities for direct one-on-one sort of marketing and communication. So yeah. we're trying to put in a lot more ways to interact with our consumer base. So we've got a social media team now, and just like everybody, I guess, but that are more active, you know, that are out there really making sure they're getting feedback, they're responding to feedback. And I think in the future, we would probably put a bit more of our marketing spend on the digital side, because we really should think about how we can be more creative in taking advantage of this opportunity for direct marketing, for direct, maybe direct communication even more than direct marketing, because we sell our products through a network of dealers, so we don't have our own stores. We don't get a chance to communicate directly with our customers. We speak a lot with architects, designers, painting contractors. We don't really have that direct access to the homeowner, and the web allows us to have that. And there's obviously a segment of that population that's very actively involved. I think from what I know, the Philippines is one of the heaviest users of Facebook on a per capita basis. So we should be thinking of how we can use it as a channel to communicate more, to get feedback especially. so that we're not getting feedback just from a secondary source, but direct from the consumer as well.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of work, but there's a lot of exciting possibilities there.
Yeah, that's right. It does open up a lot of opportunities, like you say. And also with you could have a photographic competition or something with the best mural done on Knockout, something like that. So what are some of the innovative things you have done on the web then?
Well, we've thought about with the Knockout project was adding a social component to it, and that was exactly how you could as an individual person just help make the air better in Metro Manila. So we've tried to do sites where if you get your house or if you just paint a wall, we call this program the One Wall, One World program.
Okay.
So just paint a wall and let us know. We'll put it up on the site. We'll sort of identify who we'll make sure people know you're doing your social contribution. Hmm. So I wouldn't say we've completely been as successful as we wanted to on that, but we've got to do more work on that. And from a social media standpoint, I think we're doing what we need to do, but we haven't gone let's say anything above the crowd in that terms.
Mm. Okay, so lots of opportunity there still.
Yeah, but as I said, I need a copy of your book.
Yeah. But yeah, I like the way you've done the placed those videos prominently on there, particularly about the Knockout, and there's a lot of information there that is, I guess, it's known from all the studies done that people learn a lot more and take in a lot more from the visual component, particularly videos. And if you're you're displaying some of the more complicated things around what makes this paint work and what does it do, and then of course the artistic element that you talked about bringing in, so that's I really like the way you've done that.
Well, thank you. I think we've also put in some videos on just how to apply certain products, because it's just so hard to understand it from reading it. So you're completely right.
Mm.
Just seeing a video of how to do it is so much easier.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Mm. Another thing we're trying to promote this concept of painting white roofs to help mitigate climate change, because a white roof, as you know, reflects sunlight back into solar energy, back into space before it gets a chance to be trapped by greenhouse gases. And it's not a common practice here to have a white roof, so it's a social, it's kind of it's changing social preferences, which is not easy. So we thought, again, we should do something. This is something we're about to do, because we teamed up with the Climate Change Commission here to really push this program starting last year.
Hmm.
So again, we'd like to be able to put up a site that can acknowledge people who've done this and sort of give them social recognition for people who are doing the right things. Yeah, I think what the nice things about this new innovation is the the idea of environmentally friendly paints for so long has been about just doing as little damage as you can to the environment, lower the risk, the footprint that you might have. And I think we're seeing with these new products the opportunity to go into products that can actually help improve the environment and not do harm.
Which is
a sort of a change in paradigm. And what the exciting thing from a social part is allows everyone to be part of the solution, part of solving a problem. And that makes it a perfect venue for social media. We just need to think of how to bring this together in the right way. So, still thinking, don't have all the answers.
Okay, yeah.
Well, hopefully we can do some good stuff and show it to you later on.
Okay, yeah, well, we'll keep a watch out for that. And hopefully everybody will... We'll make some comments at the bottom of this video. Maybe you'll get some good suggestions.
Thank you, Jürgen. Yeah.
So Well, how do you keep balance? You know, you've got all these things happening and all this exciting stuff. You've got a big company to run. How do you keep balanced? What do you do when you're not working?
Well, I've got three little kids to keep me occupied the whole time when I'm at home. So, well, that's obviously very nice because it gives you a complete mental break from everything that you're doing. And also, I'm sure you know, you do glean a lot of insights from kids that
That's
you
right, yeah.
don't get in the adult world. And like you, Jürgen, I'm an avid cyclist, although I do maybe just a fraction of what you do. So I try to, I still try to, you know, basketball is a national sport here in our country, so
Yeah,
I
that's
still
right.
to play that every once in a while. Yeah. So I try to just get out there, do some physical activity, and wash my brain clean.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah, good expression.
That's
Wash your brain clean. Yeah.
your
Do you find when you're out cycling, where if you're on your own, you sort of tend to get a lot of ideas and thoughts through your mind when you're
I do,
doing it?
and you're not consciously trying to do that.
Yeah.
You're just out there thinking, "Well, I want to just go on my ride." And I think because your mind is uncluttered at that time, things do come up. Now, I'm not very disciplined in quickly writing that down and everything. But
Yeah, I
yeah.
certainly get that from time to time. If I'm on my own, all of a sudden I'll think of some ideas and, oh, that's interesting, sort of stuff that you don't normally think of.
Right.
Okay, so if you had a magic wand to fix one thing in Pacific Paints in Boys, and what would that be?
I think I'd go back to what I said earlier. If we can just get more engaged on the creative side of the feminine side, if you will, of our company, of our people, give that maybe a bit more weight, a bit more voice, into what we're doing. And to balance out, I think we're doing the other side reasonably well, and we just need to get more on the creative, trying to really understand why people buy our products, and not just buy our products, but what motivates them to do painting, and what they would like more. It's very hard when you do surveys. And I understand if I was given a survey, it'd be very hard for me to answer those questions as well. So you can't get that just purely on a survey. You need to really spend time with them and maybe understand their lifestyle a bit more, understand what could a new colored wall do for them. Because what they're buying really is not, you know, what's a, they're not really buying a can of paint. What they're buying is what that can of paint can do for them. And so maybe understanding better what they could appreciate more is probably, I guess that's the promised land if we can get there. Really trying to understand way to understand our customers even better.
Well, that there's another little gem in there. It's the consumer is not buying paint, they're buying what the paint can do for you, and that's another little marketing message that a lot of marketers don't understand. I tell people, you're not buying a website, you're buying a solution for what the website can do for you. So it's very much the same thing, and I think that's applies across all industries. So really great message.
Trying to get the get knowing that and then trying to do something with that are two different things, though.
Yeah, that's right.
The challenge is just starting.
So let's go on to our innovation round, the buzz I'm calling it. So our innovation round's designed essentially to help our audience that are innovative and smart businesses across all kinds of industries who really want to up their level of innovation and just learn more from the experiences of others. So essentially just hopefully you'll give us a quick answer to each question and there'll be something brilliant there, as I'm sure there will be. So what's your advice, the number one thing for everybody to be innovative?
I think the really difficult part about innovation is, you know, you can put your heart and soul, you can put every ounce of energy you have into this, and there's still a really good chance things won't go the way you're hoping them to go. Mm-hmm. You're going to face a lot of, you know, battles. You're going to face a lot of moments where you're going to think, what am I doing? And why did I choose to do this when life could be so much easier? So I'd say the number one thing you need to have is a very good, unless you have an incredibly strong sense of self-belief, is get a good support network. So I'm very, very fortunate to have a very supportive wife. And so she really helps me through these, when I go through this, why am I doing this moments? Because you just got so many of them. And you keep, there's just moments you think, well, is this really all worth it?
Yeah.
I mean, I could just spend my time doing what everyone else is doing and get, you know, get by. But there's obviously that element of excitement. There's that element of wanting to do something significant when you try to do an innovation. But I guess I'm sure all your listeners done this, I would assume, unless they're really skilled or lucky, have gone through these moments of self-doubt. And so I'd say the number one thing is make sure you get a very good support network, both in your workplace and at home.
Private. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
For me, it's going out. It's going outside of, a lot of times going outside the industry. I think, you know, like for example, Noxa, we brought in something that wasn't being used in the industry. It was being used in power plants and catalytic converters to bring in. And I think there's just, when you try to go out of your, say, comfort zone, your field, you do realize there's a lot of, you know, innovation, I guess. We all have different ideas about it, whether it's, I'm not a scientist, as you know very well, Jürgen, so I don't sit in a lab and or not work in a lab and try these exotic combinations of different things to come up with something. I'm not capable of doing that, but I do think there's always space where there's always innovations where it's marrying two ideas from different fields. And I think going out allows you to see those better than if you were just focused completely on your industry, which is in a way what you should be doing, because if you're trying to be the best at what you're doing, you need to do that. But at the same time, if you want to open your mind to possibilities, you kind of need to go out and just talk to different people, see different things.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's a cliche, I guess, but I would say that's where I get my ideas from.
Yeah, it's great. That's great advice. Yeah. So what's your favorite tool or system for innovation?
I think it's really having an open mind and learning from other people. Within the paint side, for example, we're very fortunate to be part of this group called the Nova Paint Club. There's 10, 12 paint companies around the world. We don't compete with each other, so we can talk and exchange notes with each other. So what might we get to understand what's going on in different markets, and you get to understand what consumers in other markets, how their thought processes are as well. And I would say it's just, again, just having your, I guess you need a lot of these uncluttered moments where your brain can be open to other ideas,
yeah.
And they might, you know, some might just not make sense, but at least you got to consider them and use that as the starting point. And that's, I mean, there's product innovation, there's obviously sort of business model innovation. And that's, I think, in the business model innovation, there's that's where you really can learn a lot from other industries.
Yeah.
And on the world is going more and more to a service, where services are in a way, are more important to growth than the manufacturing. And there's a lot of things from the service industry we certainly can learn from, and how people are treating their customers, things like that.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, people aren't buying paint, they're buying what the paint does for them, they're buying an experience.
Right. So how do you make that experience better?
Yeah.
And then once you think of it in that framework, then you can think of how are other service industry making their experience better
exactly.
for their customers.
Yeah, exactly.
You can learn even things from a hairdresser.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So what's your recommendation for keeping a project or a client on track?
I think it's for us when we're doing these projects, it's energy. You really need to make sure you've got people who are gung-ho and really committed to making this thing happen. So you just want to make sure you don't have things that get in their way that suck that energy out. For you know, if it's whether it's some long-standing corporate policy or rule or something, you just want to make sure those don't get in the way of people who are trying to do something innovative. And so because the most important part, I think, for innovators is that energy, that attitude, that can-do spirit that everyone has at the start of these things, and you just want to make sure that keeps going.
And
you don't do something that kills. And once that dies, that the whole project dies.
Yeah. So keep the barriers out of their way.
It's
great. Yeah. And so, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves in their field?
Well, I think we mentioned this earlier. You know, again, it's another cliche, but at the end of the day, I think everyone can today. Everyone can copy technology. Everyone can copy business models. There's nothing you can keep secret or as a competitive advantage in these things for a long, long time. I think so. Eventually, it boils down to people. Eventually, do you have are your people better than other companies' people? And so I think that's where you need to then spend the most of your time in as far as investing in the growth and development of your people and making sure you've got so in terms of the company, that means having, I think, your corporate culture as the main differentiating advantage, because that's one thing that's just going to be so difficult for anyone who wants to try to copy.
They
may get bits and pieces of it, but they, unless they really believe the same things you believe in, and essentially make themselves, and I mean, they can copy a product, they can copy a business practice you're doing, but I think that, as you said, today it's all about being adaptive, being quick, flexible, and how do you build that into your corporate culture? And that's, I think that's a very big challenge for companies as they grow. You're trying to be as efficient as you can in what you're trying to do, but at the same time you need to have like this mindset
you've locked up there for
right the
moment.
You're going. But for an established company, you're trying to then say, oh, this is the new way of doing things, or this is our new culture, and this is, so it takes time, but I think that investment is really going to pay off in the long run. And that's what, I think that's what is the only differentiating thing between companies in the long run.
Yeah, well, that's great advice. So get the corporate culture right, get the people on board, have the right team in place. Terrific.
So what's cliches, but I think they're true.
So what's the future for Pacific Paints Boys and then?
Well, I think we're very fortunate to be in a developing market that's growing. We've got in terms of per capita, you know, I think a Filipino uses, I think on a per annual basis, seven or eight times less paint than an Australian. So we've got a long way to go. So the future is promising in that sense. We should be able to keep growing just from the local economy growing. From the innovation side, I think the way we see the paint business, as you know, it's very difficult to export just the normal house paints because everyone has the same thing. So if you want to build an international business, it has to be special products, you know, with special features that might be either too difficult for other people to develop, or just it's a niche market and they don't in their field, and so in their home market, and they don't feel maybe it's worth the investment in that. So that's what I think we can look into more in the future, of something like Naxa provided the first test of that, and maybe we can find other things like that where it's a niche market in a lot of different markets, and you add all that up and still an interesting market. But in terms of what you mentioned about bringing the web into this is I forget the author who said it, but it's like building a tribe. But we can build a tribe, Seth Godin, I think. So you can build a tribe now internationally and not just domestically, but to get that tribe all thinking along, you know, believing the same thing, thinking along the same lines. So I think if we can use our digital tools to sort of grow that, it'd be great for us in the future. Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier that one of the things that kept you awake at night was worrying about paint becoming redundant. So what do you see as the future of the paint industry?
Well, fortunately for now, and again, I hope I'm not being blindsided by anything, but I think it's a message both you and I had when we were working together. Paint is still the most inexpensive way to transform your living space, change the look, change the feel of your room, so hopefully it's still going to be a tool that's most accessible to most people. It's most of the painting a room is still going to be cheaper than changing a piece of furniture. So from that aspect, I think we hopefully are still okay. And as far as protecting a lot of surfaces, I think it's still the most economical way to do it as well. The walls of your house outside and even metal structures, your car, even though we're not involved in those things, it still seems like today paint is still the best way to get that done. And for me, I think if we want to make it even a stronger business in the future, is adding functionality. So you know, Naxa is an example again. We add the air purification performance into your wall. The idea of white roofs making your roof, so it's not just protecting your roof, but it's now helping you become a warrior for climate change.
That's right. Yeah.
These kind of things.
There's a whole range of studies being done on the white roofs about the energy savings inside the building as well, in terms of, you know, reducing the air conditioning costs, for example, in big office buildings and so on.
Yeah, I forgot that part. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. Actually, most people would use a white roof for that purpose, for their own internal savings. But the big bonus that might become more relevant in the future is the fact that it's also helping in getting just more heat out in the space, and helping fight climate change in that way.
Well, it's fascinating.
So if we can think of other functionalities we can add into paint, then it'll make paint a more indispensable part of life, I guess. So that's a challenge, I guess, from our side.
So what do you expect from the Internet of Things, where machines will be talking to machines a lot more, and there'll be increased automation?
I've haven't thought about that so much for paint. I'm not quite sure how it'll play a role. I don't know if the closest thing I've seen today that for example for the Knox Out part is I think there's a lot of work trying to make smartphones into air pollution monitoring devices where
Okay, yeah.
you can measure pollutants and things like that from your phone. I think there's you might like this. There's a project out in Copenhagen where they're making bikes into pollution monitors as well because so many people bike there, and then that the information is relayed into these servers where that collate all this data so that at any given time they can get an indication of what the pollution levels are in different parts of the city, that kind of
Okay,
thing. So
yeah.
I see developments happening that side just from more the paint side. I mean, aside from these apps where you can instantly take a picture of your house and or your room and just change the colors and see which ones you like before you place the order. I mean, beyond that, I'm not sure what the other possibilities are. But those kind of things, I guess, have become commonplace today.
Okay, well, before we wrap up with Johnson, just getting back to the competition. So, as I said, I'm giving away a copy of my 7 websites web design secrets to get you more sales. That's a workshop video together with workbook and a resources guide. And what we'd like you to do to enter this competition is leave a comment under the video and tell us what you've done that's innovative in a sense of combining a scientific development and art, just like the Knox Out initiative. So I think that's a relevant one. Leave a comment, be as informative as you can. So you've got to think about this one a little bit and share with us, but that's why you get the prize for putting in the work. Leave a comment under this video and I'll get Johnson to swing by in a couple of weeks and award that prize. Is that okay?
Thank you. It'd be my honor to, Jürgen. Thank you.
So, in wrapping up, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give any business that wants to be a leader in innovation and productivity?
I think it's very, very difficult to do both. One is you're trying to really continually improve your business, and the other is really, in a way, I mean, again, as we said, there's different ways of thinking of innovation, but in this context, I'm thinking creating a new business model, or at least making sure you don't get eaten up by a completely new business model out there. And they're difficult, but I think companies need to do both. You need to make sure you're as efficient, you're as sharp as you are in what you're doing today. Otherwise, someone will put you out of business. And then on the other horizon, you have to think about someone out there is thinking about something that may make your business irrelevant, so or your whole industry irrelevant in the first place. So you've got to do both, and each one calls for a different kind of innovation. I think the make being the most productive, being the most efficient, calls for more incremental type innovation, where you're improving your processes, one step at a time. And most companies are pretty good in doing that. You know what the targets are. You just make sure everyone's working towards that target, and you get to achieve it. But we've seen, especially in the internet age, how so many new businesses have come from nowhere and just displaced existing business. So how the challenge of how to make sure you also have a team of people thinking about that and doing the work on that. So I think since it's mostly been startups that have been doing this type of work well, we might need to understand more what the difference is in a startup culture versus an established company culture, and then think of how we can have a startup culture type within our company to think about these new innovations, these new disruptive, if we can call them disruptive innovation type ideas. So might make sense that you need to have sort of startups within your company. And the experience I've had with Naksad shows me that in a way an established company has the best of both worlds, because you've got the resources that the startup doesn't. But you need to have a culture that, again, going back to how a lot of these new innovative ideas, a lot of them will fail. It's just part of the deal. You don't know which ones will work, which ones won't work. And I think in a lot of established companies, there's too high a penalty for failing. You know, if you work on a project and take a new product and it doesn't take off, then sort of you're stigmatized for being not a good man, not a good business leader or something. Whereas I think the odds are just more heavily against you than if you were, you know, trying to grow an existing product line or something. So I think culturally you need to have almost two different companies. You know, you need maybe 95-99% of your company working on that incremental innovations, making sure you keep improving there. Maybe you have a small percent of percentage of your company really as designer startups, where they're almost outside, they're playing, they don't have to play by the rules of your existing company, and maybe you think of them as the way a venture capital firm does. You just do some funding for them. And again, that's the advantage an established company has. Because when I think of Naksad, I think if we were completely a startup and having to depend funds from outside, it would just have been so much more difficult. The fact that we could get a budget from our existing company just made it so much easier. But at the same time, the guys we had who were working on this were kind of outside. They didn't have to. If they have to worry about the day to day things, they'll never get anything done.
Yeah, yeah. So they were kind of the startup group, if you like.
Yeah. So I think it's a tricky balance, but I think you almost need to have two different companies. And I know this is I might be contradicting myself earlier, saying that you need your company culture is the most important one.
Yeah.
But now I'm saying you might need two different cultures. So
yeah.
I'm not sure how this to it, but I think you really need two different. You need to do two both these things. Otherwise, obviously, the first one, make sure your business continues, keeps growing, keeps getting stronger. But you need a little thing on the side, just exploring these little opportunities that might actually become bigger.
Yeah.
Not just as a defensive matter, but also just there could be one great opportunities there.
So. Yeah, well, there's some great insights there, so that's really good. So thanks, Johnson. It's been a really great interview today. Where can people reach out to say thank you for all the things that you've shared today and all the great insights?
Well, thank you. I hope if people don't mind, they can email me directly.
Yeah.
The handle is johnson@boisen.com.ph.
Okay, and we'll...
And if that's a mouthful to remember, people can look me up where we hooked up in the LinkedIn page. I guess that might be easy.
So on LinkedIn as well. We'll put the links underneath the video today. So thanks very much, Johnson. It's been an absolute privilege today. It's been really enlightening. I've learned a lot, and it's been exciting to learn a lot more about the Naksad development in particular. So thanks very much for being on the InnovaBuzz podcast.
Well, thank you, Jürgen. It's been an honor. Thank you.
Hi. Now, I hope you enjoyed meeting Johnson as much as I enjoyed interviewing him. We both had a ball on that interview and both learned a lot. So there are a lot of gems there, particularly around a culture of innovation and having the right team in place and removing the barriers that might be in the way for them to get on with innovation. So the show notes and resources for this interview will be at innovabiz.com.au /JohnsonOnKing. That's JohnsonOnKing. All one word, no hyphen, no underscores, Johnson on King. Now, you can also subscribe to the Innova Buzz podcast over on iTunes or Stitcher so that you'll never miss a future episode. Now, I was so engrossed with talking to Johnson about all the innovation that is going on at Pacific Paint Boys, and particularly the Knox Out, that is really exciting development, that I completely forgot to ask who he recommends that I interview next on the Innova Buzz podcast. Now, he suggested to me after we stopped recording two names, and so I'll share those now. The first one is Glenn Finkel from a company in the US called Purity, and they have developed a clear vision of the Knox Out product that Johnson talked about. They've been working on that for over 10 years. They've done some fabulous stuff with the development there. In fact, they've won a lot of awards for that, including the 2012 Edison Award, which is a pretty prestigious award in the innovation area. So Glenn, look out in your inbox. You'll be receiving an invitation from me for the Innova Buzz podcast. And the other gentleman that Johnson recommend I interview is Miguel Nieva. Now, Miguel is the creator of ColorAd, which is a system for colorblind people to recognize color. That's right, colorblind people recognizing color through the use of this system called ColorAd. Now, this is currently in use in the subway in station in Lisbon in Portugal, on the maps there, so that the colorblind people can understand those maps much more easily. And also it's starting to find use on paint cans, which is where Johnson obviously became more interested in this. Now, this is an idea that Galileo magazine has featured amongst the 40 top ideas that are going to change the world. So it really is something that has got recognition and it's already in practical use. So Miguel, look out in your inbox. You too will be receiving an invitation to the Innova Buzz podcast. Now, a reminder about the competition today. So the prize is a copy of my workshop, 7 Website Design Secrets to Get You More Sales. That's a video series together with a workbook and resources guide. And to be in the running to win that competition, leave a comment below the video and tell us about something innovative you've done where you've combined science and art in a way that has enhanced that innovation. So be very descriptive, explain to us what you've done, even include images or video if you like. So we do want you to do a little bit of work and go to a little bit of effort, but that's why we give out the prize. So leave a comment under the video and in a few weeks I'll get Johnson to swing by and award the prize. So finally, I'll sign off with my usual reminder, and that is, if you don't innovate, you'll stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and innovate on.